everybody. Layman Pascal here on behalf of myself, Bruce Alderman, the Integral Stage, and all the adjacent communities that we're down to service. One of the things we're interested in doing is allowing developmental thinkers to explore and express their feelings about places, politics, procedures, and philosophies that form part of the common human discourse. Today, we're joined by man's man, ladies' man, man about town, Jason McClain, to get a sense of where he stands relative to libertarianism. What is it? How did he get involved in it? What are its ongoing virtues and its structural limitations? And what's it like to evolve into a post-libertarian position that leaves some of your former comrades behind? Hi, Jason.
Hi, Layman. Thanks for having me.
What is real libertarianism as far as you're concerned?
Well, I've heard a lot of, what's funny is I encounter people that are like, it's this or it's that. I'm like, no, actually, the one organizing principle for libertarianism is that you don't initiate force. Now, if force is initiated upon you, then you respond with overwhelming force. But inherently, it's just don't initiate force. Don't do harm. Now, the problem is that leads to things like the sovereign citizen movement or, like taxation is theft. Like I didn't agree to this. This is theft. It's a protection racket, they'll say, like things like that. And it's not untrue that the government has a monopoly on the initiation of force. But we're not individuals. Like, we're so interdependent. The whole thing is sort of absurd when you really start to think about it. You asked who it appeals to, and I mean, who it really appeals to is people who are high-level thinkers. Maybe they're extraordinary humans, and they are wondering why the heck they need anybody else. But also speaks to a certain level of development egoically. I mean, I remember when I first read, by the way, I read Atlas Shrugged before I read The Fountainhead, which is not the way that usually goes. Probably because Atlas Shrugged requires like the first 400 pages, it's just character development. But I also remember when I left my wife 20 years ago, I plugged in the audio tape of The Fountainhead being read, and those first opening pages of the heroic guy, he knew that they weren't going to like him, and he just laughed because, there were choices to be made. But, and I just, tears started streaming down my face. So it does appeal to a certain, I'll say masculine, heroic view of man, right? But we're so interdependent, so it's a bit of delusion.
In general,
yeah.
What do you think libertarians are good at, and what are they not so good at?
So part of the problem is a lot of people have co-opted the libertarian label, but they're really like, and I'm gonna gently tip my toe on politics here. They're really just white supremacists, or people who want to be left alone, or people who don't understand the interconnectivity. But what they're really good at is they're being philosophically consistent. Like, and Jonathan Haidt, who cites, his name, but I don't, but the anti-fragility guy. And Jonathan Haidt's gone. Lab. Thank you. Jonathan Haidt has gone around, and he's H-A-I-D-T, I think. And he's spoken in universities, and he's talked about anti-fragility. He's talked about how we're doing a disservice to the younger generation. And basically, he's just bringing the wisdom traditions of Buddhism. Like, hey, maybe your thoughts aren't, verify your thoughts. Those create your feelings. So libertarians are incredibly philosophically consistent. They also score horribly low on empathy. And for me, it really does boil down to this the evolution of ego is like me against the world. They're like, fuck yeah. And then me and my people against the world, which they're like, yeah, other libertarians, awesome. But then we're actually all in this together. we really are, whether people want to realize it or not. And to me, a lot of that came to the forefront in the pandemic. I don't know if you saw this or not, but In-N-Out Burger just made it a fireable offense for their employees to wear masks in 5 states. And you could probably guess which, or you could probably guess 3 of the 5 states. So, and unfortunately, a lot of the far right has really co-opted libertarianism. But libertarianism is supposed to be like constitutionalist, you know, self-reliance. That's all really great. And, you know, I'm sure they're ordering from Amazon and they love roads and infrastructure. It's just sort of silly. I don't know that you can actually have libertarianism in reality, practically, in this world, unless you're, you know, catching your own food, processing your own food, living on an island or in the mountains and off the grid, and you built the house yourself. Like, it's sort of silly.
Are there a lot of libertarians who are trying to do that, who have a high level of practical capacity for living in an extremely off the grid, independent manner?
Well, I would number myself among those who, like, I'm fine without other people, but there's a hidden need for other people. I barely leave my house. You know, if the water plant goes down, I mean, I have a theory that if society breaks down, it's not going to be zombies, or it's going to be bad water. It's going to be water filtration. It's going to take people down. So there's all these interdependencies that we don't realize. And a lot of people who call themselves libertarians, although I don't think they're philosophical libertarians, want to talk about how horrible China is. But man, if you've ordered anything off Amazon, it was probably made in China. And I don't mean Taiwan. I mean mainland China. So are they psychologically prepared for isolation? Probably. Do they understand all the practical skills it would take? No, they'd have to do Gold Skulch or have some sort of, you know, like a community, but then you're still living in community and you're still interdependent on each other. But here's the thing that libertarian leaves out, and, you know, I don't know if I want to talk about the, like, I sent you a list of books I've read and stuff, and we went into that deeply last time, maybe too deeply last time we had this conversation, but they're leaving out how much they are not. They're leaving out how dependent we are, like our interdependency. Even if they don't psychologically or emotionally need the relationships, let's say, for nourishment, which is questionable, but let's say that they really don't. I mean, I have long said I don't really need people, but man, what I love, like that one woman, you know, like I want a lover. I want someone to connect with. They are horribly delusioned about how, or about their lack of interdependency on everything.
Is that is that primarily a cognitive or an emotional problem? Is it an inability to see the fact of how interconnected we are, or is it an inability to emotionally appreciate a fact that they already are aware of?
I think it might be both, and there's certainly, you know, a lack of empathy, but. You know, for me, the question really is, how do we want to, like, what kind of society do we want to create together? Because we are a we, whether we like it or not. And we can have our own internal experience, but we are a collective, whether we like it or not, whether we want to accept it or not. We're all in this together, regardless of what this is, whether we want to accept it or not. Now, where libertarianism does excel is some of it, first of all, logically consistent in ways that, I mean, just read anything by Dr. Murray Rothbard. I was like, God damn it. I didn't want to agree with this, but can't see where he's wrong logically. So there's that. And let's just talk about decentralization, because I think it's important, partly because the 10th Amendment, which, if people don't know, the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution, I know there's probably people listening outside the U.S., but it is it basically says, if it's not an enumerated thing that the federal government is supposed to handle, we leave it up to states. And we have, of course, 50 states with a wide variety. I mean, even within states, there's a wide variety of people. And that's why when people say people from Texas, I'm like, which part? I've been warned to not go to West Texas. People in California, you go to the Central Valley, it's kind of like Texas. Like there's just a, I mean, 30 million people in, you know, California, 25 million, right, in Texas, I think. And we're a nation of over 300 million people, 340 or 350 at the last census. It's difficult to have centralized decisions that make sense. And we learned very quickly I'm going to bring this back, but in the war in Iraq, we learned very quickly that part of the reason for the problem with the insurgency is we were trying to centralize decision-making. And a lot of the colonels and sergeants on the ground were like, this doesn't work in this sect with these people or in this sector with, you know, with this particular, you know, like there's Shiite and Shia and there's the Kurds in the north. Like there's a bunch of stuff. And so what we started doing, we just started giving them money. Like, here's a pallet of money. Do what you need to do in that town. And that works really well. And we've seen the problem also in this country of block grants to states around what some people like to call entitlements, other people like to call safety nets. We gave block grants to states. You just do your, and on the surface, it sounds like a good idea. You just make your own decisions. But we've learned recently that there's a lot of fraud that goes on. In the last week, it was uncovered that 500,000 people went off Medicaid in Texas because of procedural, like they didn't answer a letter or something. And so they just have no health care suddenly. 80% of them, by the way, were for procedural reasons. The federal government's like, we have some questions, Texas. But we know if there were a different
we president. Might be meandering now.
Thank you. So
let's come back to this question of distribution, because in general, I'm in favor of distribution of control. Individual agents need a lot of freedom to perform their own experiments and operate as a collective intelligence, but there are limitations and requirements on that. So what are the limitations on distribution as a theory of organizing?
Let me give you an example. We just saw the results of states' rights with Dobbs, which is what overturned Roe. Deeply unpopular decision. And because 27 of the states are held, they have supermajorities by Republicans. Suddenly, people who have a 70% approval rate of access to women's health care suddenly don't. Because we, instead of saying, hey, as a federal government, we should allow women to have health care. Another great example is Brexit. And you may or may not have noticed this, but when Brexit happened, first of all, lots of things happened. But one of the things that's most notable is because there's no longer the European Union regulations around clean water, there's feces in all the water around England, all of it. A stunningly high, like there should be some centralized decisions. We need to take care of the commons. And so there are some things that should be decentralized, you know, live your life however you want to live it. But there are some things that absolutely should not. Like, how do we as a nation, as a world, take care of the commons? We're seeing it with global warming. I mean, it's an obvious, obvious thing, right? There's like, we've reached a tipping point. So we need to have some intelligent combination. The problem with a lot of libertarians I have seen is they intentionally want to undermine faith in our institutions, in our centralized institutions. Although they've been feeding the court with the Heritage Foundation nominees, that's a separate matter. That's a textualist constitutional matter. But we need to have some agreement that there are certain things that are good for all of us. We're the only nation in the industrialized world that has medical bankruptcy because everyone else has national health care and it's cheaper for them and they get better health results also. We pay more for health care and we get poor results in terms of health and mortality rates and pretty much everything.
How is that perceived by libertarians? Like, is that perceived as freedom or is that perceived as an insidious additional level of governments called a corporate bureaucracy getting between you and the things you want to do.
Yep, that's how they perceive it.
I'm curious about states, actually. I want to jump back to this because I have a similar query about that. When I talk to libertarians, it seems like the role of the federal government looms very large in their imagination. And I'm curious in the states how they think about state governments. Is that an additional level of centralized control that bothers them? Or do they think about it as wonderfully distributed relative to the federal government?
I love that you said in their imagination, which is, I mean, dude, I don't know. I've lost most of my libertarian friends. They think I took the blue pill, and they mean that in both ways. I was like, no, I've just started looking at the numbers. I've just started looking at results. I started looking at Europe. We should always be interested in increasing our results. I know I'm not leaving the West Coast anytime soon, though, for fuck's sakes. I feel like we're in a safe zone. I mean, the three governors just signed a bunch of things Idaho just to my, well, yeah, that's a meander. I don't know. I've lost a lot of my friends. They think I'm just some weird socialist now. I'm like, all right, well, what kind of world do we want to create? What kind of society? By the way, libertarians, we live in a society. I don't know. What a fucking newsflash. I wish I could do had an audio drop for like newsflash.
This just in, breaking news. Humans organized into societies.
I love the old timey voice. I know, right? Like, what the fuck? Dude. And so the libertarians, I know, they're like, well, we could all live on like 3 miles out of a yacht and, you know, or an old shipping container, like whatever. And I'm like, sure, if you're rich, but newsflash, not everyone is rich. And also, you know, I really do think they hate this too. We benefit from diversity of thought, diversity of experience, and even biologically, it's been proven that people who mix races, their immune systems are stronger. That's the metaphor. We all benefit. We all get stronger with multiple perspectives, multiple genes. Like it's a net benefit. Like I don't know what they're scared of. I do think you're right. It's a looming fear in their imagination. I don't like some of the stuff that Washington has done recently. It's, you know, too far in both directions. I also know if I went across the mountains, they'd be like, look at that queer with his hair. Like they would immediately, I've been warned actually. Well, actually I've been warned not to flirt with women east of the mountains, but I don't know. What I do know is there's a disconnect with a lot of libertarians between results and philosophy. I was talking to my friend Lyric about this. Like there's this weird, like they have this utopia in their head, in their imagination. Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Doesn't actually work in reality. And the other thing that's kind of weird for me around libertarians is they hate their whole idea is economic efficiency. And yet we could house the homeless for far cheaper. And by the way, this is a multinational study, like America, Canada, Finland, and I think maybe Denmark, they've all said openly, we could house people for less than it costs to police them in homelessness camps. Like we just moved a bunch of, I say we, the cops here just moved a bunch of people for the Major League Baseball. Apparently the All-Star Week just happened here in Seattle. I don't know. I don't care about that. It's not a sports pastime. But it cost millions of dollars when we could have just put them in, and we could have been doing this for a long time. And all the studies have shown if you house people for 3 months, once they have a stable place to eat, they can cook their food, they're not in survival mode all the time, then they actually become part of the workforce, a large percentage of them. Not all of them. Some of them have, you know, addiction issues that need counseling. Some of them, you know, but some of them just need a shower and a $25 suit. and it costs more money. Just like, so like capital punishment, which is one of the, like, I get people want their revenge, their vengeance, their like, or they want to feel complete. And it costs way more money to execute somebody than it does to just house them for the rest of their life in prison. So put them in prison for life, which I think is more suffering, but that's a psychological and moral thing. But it, for a libertarian, it should it costs less. So we could house people and feed them for less money than it costs to just police them. So I really don't understand the weird. And all I can say is it's their empathy tests are so low. And so they never put themselves in that position.
So what I'm hearing is there's a tendency among libertarians to imagine that they are kind of hard-nosed realists, but actually they're quite idealistic. And because there are whole ranges of realistic solutions that are very efficient that they are emotionally uninterested in.
That's very diplomatic. I think they're delusional and they're utopian. And they're not there, and they're disconnected from people. And I think you asked me last time, like, do they need to experience a thing, or does somebody need to experience? And you know, I think a great example is Dick Cheney. When his daughter came out as gay, he's like, "All right, well, now I'm cool with gay rights." Okay, sure, but we shouldn't have to do that, especially not people listening to this. Like, we should be able to be like, what would it be like if I were in their shoes, period. Which is why I'm like, you know, gay rights are human rights. Trans rights are human rights. Women's reproductive rights are human rights. Which, by the way, the United Nations agrees with. And the International Criminal Court says that forced pregnancies is a crime against humanity. It's worth noting that the United States is not a signatory. The International Criminal Court, the Roman, anyway. So
I'm curious where the threshold of the empathy gap is here, because I'm assuming libertarians care about their families. I'm assuming they care about their friends.
Do they? I don't know.
I don't know if they are or not. I'm making that assumption, but like, where does caring for your immediate people cease, and it starts to become this threatening specter of collectivism?
It's usually about money. So I can't tell you how many libertarians are who are like, yeah, I really feel for them. I'm fucking not going to give them any money. Like, I have a friend who brags about the fact that, like, a homeless person, he'd be like, "Oh no, I'm sorry, I can't." And he was wealthy. And so a homeless person went. Now, some people, and this is in San Francisco, they're aggressive, and I've had shouting matches with, I'm like, fuck you, like, you. I remember one time I was struggling, but I was always in a suit and I had an office and in the financial district, but I had to let go of my apartment. My overhead was $6,000 a month, and it was after the financial crash, and I was like, and I had always said, if I had to choose, would I choose my office or my flat? And I was like, I'll sleep in my office, it's a pretty dope office. So that happened. Then I, you know, went downstairs, and this homeless guy was like, he bitched me. I was like, do you fucking know me? Just because I went off on him. And he goes, "Hey man," because I was like, I'm not even sure how I'm eating tomorrow. I mean, I'm probably be fine, but, and he gave me his entire cup of change. And it was a big, he was like, "Hey man, you might need this more than me." And I was like, damn, like, this homeless guy had more empathy than a lot of very wealthy libertarians I know. He's like, "Hey man," now I mean, I did dress him down. It was like a 90 second, like, just because I'm fucking wearing a suit, like, don't make assumptions about me. It was that kind of thing. This is 12 years ago. Well, it was 2000, right after 2008. So I don't know what that disconnect is, but it's usually about money. It's usually about, like,
and so, you know, I also get the impression from the libertarian discourse I've heard, which is not a huge sample, that they're very focused on direct persuasion, like the notion of a gun to your head, someone directly forcing you to do something. Right. And they're not very focused on indirect persuasion and the forms of unfreedom that come from circumstances and incentives. Does that sound right?
It does. So because, you know, the government has a monopoly on force, and taxation is force. They extrapolate that out. And one of the libertarian, I want to call it a canard, is that they will say, for someone who's like for healthcare or for feeding the homeless or whatever, they'll say, well, would you put a gun to my head and make me pay for that man's shoes? And they'll say, no, of course not. All right, well, would you, have a stranger put a gun to my head? No, of course not. Well, then why would you have your local representative and it's an argument against taxation. Taxation is theft, all these things. It's like, right, but we're in a society together. And I'm looking at Western Europe, and I don't understand why they don't like to look at results, because most of the libertarians I know, they're like, results over ideology. I'm like, sure, when are you going to catch up on that? Because every Western European democracy is better than us at everything, and they have a more intelligent population. And we've been undermining public education in this country. We've been undermining or making it worse, healthcare in this country. I mean, I mentioned the Texas thing. Frankly, I'm not sure how to have these conversations with libertarians anymore, because they think I've just taken the blue pill. And I'm like, or I've gone from me against the world to us, me and my people against the world, to we're all in this together. Like, those are stages of ego development. And somewhere along the way, libertarians get fixated with the orange stage in spiral dynamics of development, and they get stuck at rational, and they never evolve beyond, although most of them have very high opinions about their level of evolution, because they're cognitively brilliant, but emotionally...
You think they're... a partial, fragmentary, unhealthy version of the orange ideology? Or is it the core essence of orange modern thinking?
Can you repeat that?
Is libertarianism a good or a bad expression of Orange's values? Like, is it a problematic version of Orange, or is there zealotry in a way, an accurate feeling of really we're saying the core essence of what this developmental structure is?
So I think libertarianism, again, this country used to be fractured, like communities. Well, I say fractured, like, from a global perspective, small communities. I think libertarianism can be a very healthy expression of orange or rational, but we should have evolved past that a long time ago. So the unhealthy thing is people whose growth is stunted there. And in terms of the integral community, I mean, you know this, because you've probably seen my post about this for years. My argument has always been, people who are in the integral community, the problem is they're not at integral. They have the cognitive development and the understanding, and they confuse that with emotional and moral development. By the way, this is not new. Wilbur talked about it briefly, at least in Cosmic Consciousness. I talked about it briefly online, and it, like, almost embarrassingly, with Don Beck. And I used to say that everyone's at green and they're saying that they're integral, yellow, again, using spiral dynamics colors, because I'm not up to date on all the color scales. It's regressed, because you have all these hyper intellectual men, mostly, who are the, I'll say, mean orange meme. And that is hyper prevalent. Elon Musk is the easiest and worst example of it. Like, he's just some weird, I've been recently listening to a lot of podcasts about how people who get in these echo chambers, and they're just online too much. I mean, I know that you and I are online right now, but I have zero relationship with my mobile phone unless I'm leaving the house. I don't, like, the reason I'm not on Threads is because it's only mobile, and I'm like, maybe next year. Like, I don't get in these toxic echo chambers. And so I think libertarianism, and I also think the problem with libertarianism is like technology can handle it all. Cryptocurrency is the future. And most of these things have been like, wow, that really doesn't work unless we take care of the commons, unless we have a socialized understanding of like what would work best for all of us, for the greatest number of us, because we're all together.
I think what I just heard is that toxic echo chambers can cause a kind of emotional regression or stagnation, so that people who are expressing a healthy version of the orange stage might end up using the same words, but actually operating as if they were pre-modernist believers in the cause, with a kind of collapsed ethnocentric ability to relate to people.
There's definitely too much ethnocentrism. I'm not sure you say a lot of big words, and I'm not as smart as you. Like, I should have said that at the beginning, but I'm not as smart as you. So there's definitely a problem with echo chambers. One of the things I always encourage people to do is, if you disagree with the party that has the most power in our government, that you seek out sources that are in a disagreement with them, so that you see a different perspective. To me, this should be fucking, it's like elementary. You're looking to see where you might be wrong, rather than having reinforcement about your confirmation bias. And I, like, this has been my orientation for 20 years, 25 years. Like, I don't understand people who are like, oh, like, I don't understand what's happened in media. And I was watching a podcast about how to be aware of, and that there's a great, I'll send it to you later. There's a great podcast on like the use of AI in political campaigns, which is amazing. And it's all 1.5-hour long discussion between somebody who was the first person who was in that position in the White House. And I think it was in Obama's first or second year, like, hey, you know, like, let's talk about social media. Right. And they just had a conversation 2 days ago about the use of AI. And they said a few very interesting things. But one of the things they said, I was like, that's never going to happen. They're like, hey, if you find a perspective that on social media where you're like, yeah, that's me, you should ignore that. And I was like, they don't have that much fucking self-awareness. I mean, that's they're going to be like, oh, yeah, I want some of that. It's like crack. And
it's a very strange thing to me, because it seems on the face of it that that's very much a form of coercive manipulation. Like, isn't that as bad as taxation, except that it's not as much about money, when the algorithm and the system and the phone and everything you're doing is actually trying to control you?
Of course it is. And the solution is to have self-awareness, to have, God, I hate that they changed the name of the company, but to have meta awareness, like, like, you know, I learned that when Facebook changed the name, it was like, I'm never going to be able to say this again without saying a bunch of other things. Yes, of course it is. Studies show that fake news travels 6 times faster on Twitter than real news, because they have figured out how to trigger the limbic system. And so asking people to be like, oh, this is reinforcing my beliefs, I should seek out another source, you're already assuming that they're really intelligent and they already have another level of self-awareness that most people don't have. And that's why, you know, that's why the Republican primaries are looking like they are. You got to be angry. You got to trigger people. You got to talk about, like, the top 4 things for Republican primary voters are nothing that actually matters for the country. It really doesn't. And it has zero to do with any kind of policy that would make sense for us as a collective to take care of the commons.
I just had a friend vote against funding
libraries.
Is this an English speaking phenomenon, or is this a global phenomenon? Are there libertarians from around the world, or is this mostly like England and North America?
Well, so let's say the Anglosphere. And so I'll include like Britain, Canada, large parts of Canada, Australia, America. That's the Anglosphere. I mean, I've had plenty of stories from my Canadian friends about MAGA trucks, seriously, rolling through their towns. And I'm not just talking about the trucker thing, you know, anti-vax thing. It's like, what are you doing? but you know, Ottawa, even in British Columbia, some of my friends are like, yeah, I can't really go out a whole lot because there's a bunch of weirdos. So it's definitely not a European problem. It's definitely an Anglosphere problem. However, the populist right, which is trending fascist, despite what they are being told by the people they are adoring, is trending globally. It's happening in Spain right now. There is a far right president. In Finland, there's concerns about the far right. And there's something that's common among all of them, which I just don't get. To be honest, I don't understand, because I grew up in the blissfully multicultural San Francisco, born and raised there, spent 48 of my 52 years there. I don't get the xenophobia. I don't get transphobia. I don't get any of it. But there is something common. It's like there's disaffected white people who feel like they've been disenfranchised because of multiculturalism. And they're like, they're scared. They're terrified. Matt Walsh, you're just going off about how Snow White's not. And what's that other fucktard's name? Shapiro. They just did a bunch of videos around how, oh my gosh, Snow White's not actually going to be white. They just did a bunch of videos around how, you know, this is cultural appropriation. I'm like, who cares? But this is on the rise globally.
I'm generally of the who gives a damn opinion,
but far right populism is on the rise globally and has been for a while.
Is that in part a response to actual encroachment and overreach and social hysteria in administrative liberal states?
I think it's a reaction. I'm not sure about that. I don't buy that, actually. I think that's in their imagination. I do think it's a reaction. So I thought we were living in a post-racial world when Obama got reelected. I really did. And he said, like, we're in a post-racial. And I was like, fuck yeah, we are. Yeah. Yay. And then I was like, and then the backlash came with Trump. I was like, oh, and I said, this is a reaction to, to us pushing what I'll say were green values, right, in terms of spiral dynamics. And so we regressed, like, there's this red uprising, right? So a lot of Republicans who you could count on to be like blue or orange, right? Instead, they regressed to red because of the pressure of being pushed forward. And so, you know, it's going to look like the stock market. We're going to go up. There's going to be regressions, progressions. Okay, I get that part. But the authoritarian and white supremacist trend in the far right, which sadly a lot of libertarians, so I've seen a few libertarian factions. One is they don't understand what's happening, and they've been in information silos, so they don't realize the slow drip of the extremism that they've been exposed to. The other is they really are scared. That they're losing their privilege. I mean, even Fox News said something that, and I hate to quote them, but they said something that really proved that they understand privilege. They just don't want to share it. It was hilarious. But this is happening globally. The right populist movement is anti-LGP, is anti-foreigner. And the reality is, and I've known this for years. I've had friends who've lived in Sweden and they said, hey man, you get away from the cities. They have Bibles, they have guns, and they don't like people that look different. It's just, you know, it's just the way of the world, but there is a backlash. Is it a backlash against government? I don't think so.
Is it a backlash against economic inequality and anxiety and insufficient material conditions?
That's there, but the weird thing is those in America anyway, those states are the ones that are they take the most out of the federal, like the blue states contribute far more, than the red states do, and the red, you know, Republican states. And they have a far larger number of people who, you know, take government, I'm going to use their language, take government handouts. So I don't like there's a messaging problem. Like defund the police. That was a messaging problem. That's not what anybody meant. What people meant was, let's take the money from enforcement and put it into, you know, social care. Like, cops are handling way too much and they're not trained for it. But defund the police was a whatever. It was a, you know, call to action, but it really wasn't what they meant. It's a market. CRT. My sister has a PhD in education. We both agree that we shouldn't call it CRT. We just call it accurate fucking history. Like, talk about right. slavery. Now,
given all your liberal left-wing apologetics, it's hard to believe you're actually a libertarian. But let's take for granted the fact that you were a libertarian. And then what I want to ask is something emotional.
Yeah,
right?
Like lifetimes ago. Sure. Yeah.
And what has that transition been like? Like, what was it like for you to leave people behind, to continue to tweak and integrate your worldview and find that smart friends were not, as far as you could tell, evolving? What was that like?
I mean, two people I thought would be friends for life. You know, I not great. I mean, I had a friend of 30 years who, I said on that TED talk, you know, the dirty secret of capitalism, it talks about the $15 an hour minimum wage and how it actually increased jobs in Seattle, despite the neoliberal economists that said it would cause unemployment. And he goes, well, why should I spend time listening to this? I was like, what? And I was like, after like 10 or 15 minutes, I was like, I'm not going to sell you on expanding your worldview. Like, you might be wrong about a few things. This guy is a billionaire and he's created 10 billion, like tens of billions of dollars in value. And he's saying it's good for all of us if we increase the minimum wage. Maybe fucking listen to it. Like I was like, you know, and then, you know, another friend of, I don't know, 15 years said, I just took a blue pill. I was like, or, you know, or not, or, you know, like, I mean, because I am psychologically prepared for no, I mean, I don't, dude, fucked up. It's been really weird to have the people I thought I was, like me and my people, to have that not, you know, be true anymore. And to have them just, I never thought people who were so smart could be so fixed in their views. I was not prepared for that. I'm okay with losing the friendships. I've been quite good at ending friendships if they're unfulfilling and romantic or professional. Or I'm like, you know, feels like a natural end. That's cool. I know, and I've written a lot about this and spoken a lot about, like, you know, having healthy boundaries. And I was what I was not. I can't believe how badly I'm stumbling on this. I was not prepared for people who, one of them introduced me to integral theory when I was 24, and I was like, dude, it's transcendent included. Like, let's, like, and we should always be looking for where we're wrong. We should always be looking for the opposite of confirmation bias. If you're going to be fucking healthy intellectually and emotionally at all, you should be looking for, where is what I think the world to be, where is it wrong, to just do the opposite of confirmation bias. And they, my closest friends, have not. I've made other friends, but also I'm comfortable losing all the friends I had if it means we create a better world together. And whatever the fuck they're doing, and holding on to their stale beliefs, I mean, I'm not even sure how to answer the question. It's been weird. I don't know. I have zero understanding of someone who's, when they're presented with facts, or new information, which might be like, hey, look at this person. You know, I was watching a comic and he realized because his family became homeless. Now he's very wealthy. But he said, you know, we're all three significant life events away from being homeless. Like, you know, get laid off, car breaks down, get diagnosed with cancer, don't have healthcare. Like you're like three major life things away. And I know I'll always be fine. I always sort of find a way to get by. I've survived things that most people, like I've survived five things that, you know, any one of them people should never have to experience, beginning with being in you know, in prison at a very young age. I'll always be fine. But I don't understand having a total lack of empathy for other people who are struggling or putting it. And I don't think you should have to have a friend who goes through it. I don't. But when given like facts, like look at the national debt with each administration, they'll be like, well, you know, emotional, economic policies take a while to kick in. So it's probably they'll put twist themselves in a pretzel. So I don't know, man. I've lost. Yeah, I don't. Whatever. Sorry, that was. I was hoping to land this, time, right? But I was like, "Fuck, yeah." My two most meaningful male friendships I have lost in the last 2 years because of this. I mean, yeah, fucking, and it's weird too. Like, instead of them being like, oh, you're McLean, maybe they're like, oh, you took the blue pill, huh? Or like, what? I'm like, or maybe we have been wrong this whole time. Check it out. Like,
do you feel more free now than when you were a libertarian?
More free. I mean, the easy answer would be to say yes. But I'm going to say that I like having more fluidity around how I relate to people. I think that's more freeing. I think they have a fantasy that if they, like, there's this weird, I mean, you know, like the Free State. There's somebody who tried to start Free State, which is, I think, they're buying a bunch of land in New Hampshire. There's another one that was like, let's create a I forget what they call it, but like a flotilla, like a cruise ship 3 miles off the coast. And, you know, it's in international waters. We create a libertarian, you know, utopia. I've never liked community. I don't know if I feel more free or not. What I do know is I feel more connected. But also I'm not living in some delusion that we're not connected. I mean, that's the thing. Is that we all actually are interdependent. And at the end of the day, we still have to figure out a way to care for the incompetent, the infirm, the disabled. And that could be psychologically, it could be emotionally, it could be they're just too dumb. And you know, what's really cool if you're a libertarian is you surround yourself with really smart people who you think are competent. And they're not at some things like empathy.
Is it feasible that we could get a better libertarianism, one that's more empathic, more ecological, more cooperative, or ultimately do we just have to move beyond it?
Well, so, you know, in terms, I'm going to use spiral dynamics colors again in stages. We all start at stage one as humans, and there's always going to be a red meme, which is like, hey, man, well, I've got bigger muscles, or I've got bigger guns, or I've got, or whatever. Talked to Corey Davis about this, and you know, he and I, first of all, he thought he says publicly something about like libertarianism is, I forget what he said, super childish or whatever, but we had a private conversation where I was talking to him. This is like the source code for this conversation, where I was like, dude, I've, you know, this is a few months ago, and he goes, yeah, libertarianism might work in 1,000 years for a society, he said, but right now, of course, it only works at healthy orange or above. It doesn't work for anything else. So libertarianism sort of assumes that there's nothing below that. Or they're like, well, we could put them in prisons or have, you know, a military, but let's leave that to insurance companies. It's the most, like, it doesn't actually work in practicality. It doesn't work in reality. It's great theoretically. It's the whole practice and theory thing. I can't believe it took me that long to. It's like, theory works great in theory, but in practice, what's the
yeah, phrase? That's a flip thing. In theory, there's no difference between theory and practice, but in practice, there is.
And I don't know a libertarian who isn't brilliant and white and very competent and very male. I don't know a single one. And they are brilliant and competent. I mean, there's some of them, but like, dude, you shouldn't be so, like, I can't believe Mark Michael Lewis is doing the Ayn Rand hero thing. And now I can tell you why he's the person that introduced me, by the way, to Libertarian. Like, and I understand why he's doing it. For a long time, he and I, and we agree on this, unless you have stable orange, you don't have anything else. Like stable orange, that allows for the green, what did Don Beck call it? The green group grope. And that, you know, out of every stage, the limitations of that, but, you know, it gives birth to the next stage, which is more inclusive. But so many libertarians are stuck at orange. It's insane. It's actually sad. So I don't know. They're all in business for themselves because, you know, they're that smart. I mean, like, it's great. But also I've seen a lot of them. They're just hypocritical. So, I mean, my response.
Describe most of them as being smart, white, and male.
Yeah.
What do the wives and girlfriends of libertarians think?
Well, I think they go, he's so dreamy. He's so smart. I don't know, man. I have a real problem with the women that they've chosen. And it could be that, you know, they were my friends and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? I don't. I've never indulged in that way. I mean, my ex-wife was a surgeon. One of my, you know, like my two last life partners, one of them was a JAG in the Air Force. The most recent one, it was a international consultant for Booz Allen. I like really brilliant women. We don't talk about this shit. We don't talk about politics. I 100% think that, you know, Mark was fucking below his pay grade, to use a very crude. And I've said that, like, don't do that. Don't, like, and people, like, one of the first posts that a men's group didn't go over well because it was co-ed. I was like, don't fucking below your pay grade. And they thought I meant something about money. I was like, no, like, have your evolutionary fit. Brilliant, you know, like, sharp, intellectually aware, aesthetically, like, all the things. Like, have your evolutionary fit.
Do you think that they would be more likely to evolve in terms of empathy and complexity and taking in new facts if their personal relationships were with somebody who was maybe able to actually challenge them?
Maybe. But I think reality actually is a better partner. One of the men I mentioned owns an insurance company, and Farmers is pulling out of California, and he's like, you should consult your government. I was like, oh, so now you're for government intervention suddenly? Like, oh, because it's harming your business? Like, what the fuck? Like, okay, intellectual purist. Oh, real world feedback. Suddenly, now, you can say lots of things about them pulling out of California. I've long said they should pull out of places like New Orleans and Florida, because if you want to keep rebuilding your house in a hurricane zone, fuck off. Like, you should either be paying $4,000, like, right? They shouldn't be forced to do that. And it's going to be pretty soon where FEMA is going to be the only, like, and this is where libertarians are going to be like, ah, FEMA is going to be like, it's going to be federal funds to, if people want to keep living in Florida. But this guy who's a lifelong libertarian wants people to petition their government to make sure that the and he deals with all of them, by the way, that one company is forced to still work in California. I was like, and I saw it on LinkedIn. And I was like, all right, Rich, sure. I could have trolled him, but I was like, dude, this like libertarianism doesn't work on the ground for real world people. And we would feel more free, back to your question, like 10 or 15 minutes ago, if we didn't have to worry about medical bankruptcy. Like, for God's sakes, we pay more in this country for healthcare, all of us, than they do in Western Europe. And we get poorer results because our government can't negotiate. I mean, you saw what happened, the backlash in Congress when Biden tried to negotiate a lower rate on insulin. And, you know, Gavin in California is like, fine, we'll produce it ourselves.
You've got a sense that in general, the libertarian community is unrealistic.
They're disconnected from reality. They're disconnected from reality. I mean, and I used to be one of them. This is not, I sort of woke up about 4 years ago. It's disconnected from reality, but it is theoretically a very healthy version of Orange, if they're at Orange. But people at Red are abusing it to just dominate others or do their whole thing that they do in the woods.